Stephanie.
All right. Good morning, Nicole, and everyone else who's joined us on the line. I'm on slide 3 now to discuss the presentation agenda. This is the short version, the Q&A version, to get you ready to submit your final proposal on October 16th, the deadline. This morning what we'll do is try to go through some reminders just to remind you of basic things about submitting the proposal, a few little tips here and there. The focus is on what's new in the FY10 proposal guidelines. We'll just put up some slides toward the end that remind you of what resources you have that are available to you to help you finish preparing your proposal. And we'll answer any remaining questions that you have, interspersed with providing some commonly asked questions and answers that are from our previous clue-in that we had on September 2nd, and also in our face-to-face workshops that we've had throughout August and September. So with that, move on to slide 4, and this is just a transition slide to note that we're going to start out discussing the reminders, last-minute reminders, just to make sure that you get everything together in your proposal package that would help you be eligible. On slide 5, we started the competition with the request for proposals on August 12th. 60 days later, that makes the proposal submission deadline October 16th, 2009. This year, proposals can be sent through the U.S. Postal Service, by commercial delivery service, and also this year we've added electronically, you can submit your proposals to this web address, bfcompetition@epa.gov. Moving on to slide 6. Please use only one method of submission. Choose one, either USPS, commercial delivery, or submit electronically. Please do not send us faxes. We've had a lot of issues in the past where faxes have either just not been received or they've been hung up in delivery, so don't use faxes. If you send your proposal by the Postal Service or commercial delivery, you just have to be sure that they're postmarked by October 16th. If you send your proposal electronically, it needs to be received at the BF competition address by 11:59 Eastern Standard Time on October 16th, which is 10:59 Central Time in our time zone. Moving on to slide 7. After you've submitted your hard copy, concurrently, please submit a second hard, you also may submit an electronic copy, electronic, postal service, whatever. Also submit a second hard copy to the Region 7 Brownfields coordinator, who is Susan Klein, and her address and contact phone number is provided here on this slide. Moving on to slide 8. Just a reminder, at this point, you should be way beyond this information, but here's the web address for the 2010 competition guidelines. Remember that there are three types of grants. There are the assessment grants, the revolving loan funds, and the direct cleanup grants. Be sure when you go to this website that you're following the correct set of guidelines, because there are separate guidelines for the three different types. Moving on to slide 9. When responding to the criterion in the guidelines, be sure to answer every criterion as completely as possible. In some cases, your answer might be not applicable. If that's the case, just state the reason why it's not applicable. Be sure to be as specific as possible in all your responses. In the FY09 competition, the higher ranking proposals were the ones that contained more specifics about the projects, about the targeted communities, about the types and locations of the contaminants, and about the plan for redevelopment. Tie all your responses back to your targeted community wherever you possibly can, because they're the ones that ultimately would benefit from receiving the grant money to complete the project. And there are proposal checklists at the end of the ranking criteria that can help you make sure that your proposal is complete. So toward the end, be sure to use those. It's just a way of making sure that you've responded to all the criteria, that you've provided all the appropriate attachments, and that you've met all the pace limits, and so on. Moving on to slide number 10. You're required to provide a current letter from your state or tribal environmental authority. In both cases, this is going to be the state. You'll need, if you plan to submit a proposal for a site-specific petroleum assessment or a cleanup for a petroleum site, you'll need an additional letter from the state for that site-specific determination. If you're applying for more than one type of grant, you can submit one letter, but you need to acknowledge, you need to have the state acknowledge in that letter the different kinds of, the different types of grants that you're applying for, assessment, cleanup, revolving loan fund, et cetera. A current letter needs to be provided with each proposal. So in other words, if you're applying for multiple types of grants and you have one letter, just be sure to copy that letter, and each proposal needs to have that as an attachment. Moving on to slide 11. This is just to focus your attention for a minute on what's the difference between this year's proposal guidelines and last year. The biggest change is that for revolving loan funds only, if you've received money in the past, you won't be considered for an award in 2010. We're looking to make awards to new revolving loan fund grantees. Existing successful revolving loan fund grantees have received supplemental money, so they don't really need new competition money anyway. For the cleanup, this is a little bit of a change. Last year, we allowed you to demonstrate that you had fee simple title for the property at some time later after the competition closed. In this case, in this year, we're asking that you can demonstrate your property ownership before the deadline of the proposal, which is October 16th. And finally, this year, another new thing is that you can submit your proposals electronically to this web address. On slide 12, just a couple of things about the different types of grants, as reminders. This is still a confusing issue. An applicant can apply for one community-wide assessment for hazardous substances for $200,000 and one $200,000 petroleum grant for a total of $400,000 in assessment funding. For coalitions, which was something new last year, coalitions need to consist of three or more eligible entities. Everyone who's a part of the coalition needs to be an eligible entity. The coalitions may apply for up to, they don't necessarily have to apply for the entire $1 million of assessment funding. And in the coalition, they have to address at least five sites. The mix could be a 50-50 split between petroleum and hazardous substances, as we've suggested here on this slide. But it could also be another percentage mix, depending on the specific needs of your coalition. Coalition members, however, may not apply for other assessment funding in the same year, this year, that they apply for a coalition. On slide number 13, this is our best attempt to try to break it down and make it as clear as possible. Just to highlight that for community-wide, you could get $200,000 for hazardous substances, $200,000 for petroleum assessment, and that if you applied for both, your maximum amount for a community-wide assessment would be $400,000. If you were to apply for site-specific funding, you could get up to $200,000 for petroleum or hazardous substances, and you could request a waiver for the site and demonstrate that it's larger and more complex using the information that's provided in the information that's requested in the guidelines. You could apply for up to a maximum amount of $350,000 for a bigger site. If you're applying for a coalition assessment, again, the coalitions can get up to $1 million per coalition. Has to be three members. You have to assess five sites or more, and all the coalition members have to be eligible, and the maximum amount is $1 million. On slide number 14, just some specifics about the cleanup grants. Again, on the cleanup grants, you need to conduct community notification in advance of applying for the grant funding. By community notice, we mean that you need to place a public notice for your targeted community or communities in the plural. They need to receive notice that they have an opportunity to comment on your application. You need to hold a meeting, and you also need to respond to comments. Applicants who are submitting more than one proposal can have a single public meeting for all the proposals they plan to submit, but just be sure that all the targeted communities receive notice and have an opportunity to participate in a meaningful way in that public meeting. Some more about community notification on slide 15. Specifically, you need to place an ad or something equivalent in your local newspaper a newspaper that reaches the targeted area that you've identified in your proposal. It needs to be done at least 2 weeks prior to the submittal date, which is October 2nd, 2009, so that's coming up tomorrow. The ad needs to clearly communicate that the public may comment on the grant proposal, that they can attend a public meeting, and you need to specify the date and time of that meeting. And also, on this slide, we just direct you to see page 19 in the cleanup guidelines for the attachments that you need to provide in your proposal that document that you conducted the community notification. And again, just a reminder, this is for cleanup only, not assessment, not ROF. On slide 16, again, the cleanup grants this year, you have to demonstrate that you own the site, meaning fee simple title, by October 16th. Before you submit your cleanup grant proposal, you need to have conducted an ASTM phase 2 or equivalent. And also, just a reminder that with these cleanup grants, once you've received the funding, there are other things that you'll need to comply with, including developing a community relations plan, establishing an administrative record in a public place for the site, and placing a public notice to make the community aware that they can go and review the administrative record. You'll need to complete this analysis of brownfield cleanup alternatives, which is basically like a focused feasibility study under Superfund for those of you who know anything about the Superfund program. The analysis of brownfield cleanup alternatives needs to have a public notice that is some reasonable amount of time that allows the community to have meaningful involvement. Something like 30 days is typically in the voluntary cleanup program guidelines for putting a cleanup plan out for public notice. And you'll also need to respond to public comments. So that's just a reminder about some of the things to be aware of and to expect if you are selected for a cleanup grant award. On slide 17, just remember that in the competition guidelines that there are four ranking criteria. These are a lot of the same things that we did before FY 2009, but they've just sort of been condensed into four different categories. The first category is community need. The second is the project description and feasibility of success. The third is community engagement and partnerships. And the fourth is the project benefits. And all the grants add up to 100 total possible points. On slide 18, just another word about the ranking criteria. Be sure that you remember to include the letters of support from the community organizations that you identify in your response to the community engagements and partnerships criterion. And by community letters of support, what we're talking about is organization, grassroots organizations that are going to be involved in your project. The letters need to state as specifically as possible about the role that these community-based partners will play in the project, and they're required as an attachment to the proposal. On slide 19, this is just a placeholder to remind us that we're going to move into the next section and talk about additional resources. On slide 20, here are the, this is not a comprehensive list of the entire Region 7 Brownfields team. However, these are the subject matter leads. Susan Klein is the Brownfields coordinator. Devin Pollack is this year's assessment lead and competition lead as well. If you have questions about revolving loan funds, Jim Seiler is the person to talk to, and Deborah Kennedy is the lead on cleanup grant funding. I've also included the state response program coordinators' names and phone numbers on this slide. On slide 21, here are the state brownfields leads in Region 7 for our four states, for Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, and Nebraska. Hopefully we got everybody's phone numbers and email addresses correct on this slide. We've our states have changed their email addresses just a little bit, and so hopefully this information is all correct now. On slide number 22, this is just a reminder of the web-based resources that are available to you. You can go there and get more information. And on slide 23, here are a few more web-based resources, including SMARTY, which is a tool that's designed by the K-State Technical Assistance to Brownfields. Just remember that the EPA, because of our competition policy, cannot review and comment on your draft proposals. However, your state brownfield coordinators can. They can help you if you provide them enough advance notice and you give them a call and they can answer questions and review and comment on your proposals. On slide 23, this is just a transition slide moving us into the question and answer, which is hopefully the most important part of the presentation, where you get a chance to answer any last-minute questions you have about submitting your proposals. On slide 25, we just threw in a few questions just to prompt people. These are commonly asked questions to prompt you to think about questions that you might have. That was a strange noise. Did anybody else hear that? Hopefully,
yeah, we're all still here.
I think. Do a check and make sure other people were here. Nicole's here at least. Okay, on slide 25, this is a common question we get. Are the support letters from the community-based organizations included in the 18-page limit? And the answer is no, these do not count toward the 18-page limit. On slide number 26, just to continue on with that thought, how many letters of support from these community-based organizations should you have? Is there a minimum or a maximum? And the answer is there's no minimum or maximum. Just use good judgment and be sure to show that you have grassroots community support for your project. And you'll score better in the ranking. On slide number 27, does an eligible entity need to also own the property to be eligible for an assessment application? No, it's only the cleanup that you need to own. Property ownership is not necessary for the assessment grant. On slide number 28, regarding the assessment coalitions, if this was something that got asked in the first clue-in call on September 2nd, if one coalition member has an ineligible property, can that property be assessed by another coalition member? And the answer is no. If it's an ineligible property for one of the coalition members, it's an ineligible property for all. On slide 29, should a community-wide application discuss specific sites, even though you haven't been through the site selection process yet? And the answer is that a more competitive proposal will indicate some of the sites that you're thinking about assessing, the types and amounts of contamination, if you know it, and even include some information about the potential health risks that are associated with those kinds of sites. On slide 30, this question was received in one of our face-to-face workshops. I call this the Stump the Brownfields Team question because we debated this by email for about a week and finally gave up and contacted headquarters for confirmation. The question was, if an applicant submits a single proposal combining 200,000 for hazardous substances and 200,000 for petroleum assessment in a community-wide application, is it possible that they might be awarded only one type of funding? And the answer is yes, depending on the score and the ranking of that proposal relative to others. It's possible that even though you submit for both hazardous and petroleum, that you might get one or the other. So that was something we had to think about, so I put that one in there just to get everybody thinking. On slide 31, what needs to be done to request a waiver on a $200,000 cleanup grant? And the answer is that there isn't a site-specific waiver for cleanup grants. $200,000 is the maximum amount of funding that you can be allowed for a specific parcel of property for a cleanup grant. At this point, moving on to slide 32, I'll just turn it back over to Nicole for a minute to open it up to see if we've received any questions over the internet, or also feel free to, you know, take your phone off mute and ask any questions that you have.
Great. Thank you, Stephanie. I'll encourage anybody who is streaming online to go ahead and submit questions that they may have. We do have a couple in the queue already, but always great to have some more coming in. So if you do have a question, please feel free to submit it, and we will address it. I'm going to go through the ones that we have in the queue, and then I'll open it up to those on the phone to give you all a couple more minutes to think about whether you have any specific questions. Our first question actually is kind of an administrative question, which I'll just state and then go ahead and answer for everybody. I understand we had some technical difficulties on the Clue-In main webpage, and this slide presentation is now available for download on the website if you went back and to where you clicked in to say go to seminar, and it automatically directed you to the PowerPoint slides. There is now another line on the page that will allow you to download both the PowerPoint or an Adobe form of this PowerPoint, which can be used for reference later on. And that should answer the first question about whether the slide presentation will be available after the seminar to review for reference. And yes, you should still be able to use the link that was in your email confirmation to go back and review the PowerPoint presentation, and that is now on the main Clue-In Region 7 website. So we apologize for that confusion earlier. The next question, Stephanie and Bob, I will direct over to you all. And the question is written, for a cleanup grant, does the required phase two need to be called a phase two, or can it be titled differently? For instance, if it is a VCI document, can you refer to it as such?
This is Bob Richards. I don't have the, do you have a booklet here? Let me see that, but for a cleanup. But I believe it references the particular ASTM standards, so.
That it says or equivalent.
Or equivalent. Yep. Well, if, I suppose then I, it would be a judgment call then, is it equivalent or not? And I don't know.
This is Susan Klein. I think that if you're going to use a document that does not meet the ASTM Phase 2 standard, you need to identify in your proposal why you are declaring it as an equivalent. You need to demonstrate to EPA why you believe that is an equivalent document.
Did everyone hear that answer? And I'll just repeat it. If you're going to have an equivalent and not use the standard itself, you need to document in your application how it is equivalent.
Great, thank you. We will go ahead, and if that has not answered the question, please feel free to submit a clarification response. We do have another question submitted online that I'll go ahead and review. It actually has two parts to it, so we'll answer it and take them one at a time. And the question states, we are planning to submit a proposal for community-wide assessment. One of our project tasks within the budget table will be the management of the grant, such as tracking expenditures and reporting. Are there suggestions for how we should list these tasks without classifying as administrative costs?
This is Stephanie Doolin. You just want to be sure to identify in the description what the costs are and that they are, these costs are for the oversight of the grant itself, and that makes them not administrative.
And I believe there's, in the back of the one of the appendices goes into the cost.
Yes, there is an administrative, a description of what costs are considered to be administrative and unallowable.
This is Susan Klein again. When you're describing your program management costs and the management of the work in the grant, it never hurts to add the words, these will be eligible program management costs.
Good point.
Yeah, that way if there's anything called into question, you've acknowledged that you understand there are limitations.
Yes, that's a good addition.
Great. The second part of that question may also either have already been answered or you can elaborate a little bit. And it just asks you to elaborate on what EPA defines as indirect costs.
Indirect costs, for one thing, would be overhead costs. For example, if in determining what the rate of your city personnel is, for example, it is allowable to include your base rate that you get paid cost per hour plus fringe, but overhead costs for what I call the administrative building costs of just paying the rent, turning on the lights, providing heat and air conditioning, those are not allowable costs, for example. That's just one example.
Okay. Hopefully, again, if that has not answered the question submitted online, please feel free to submit a clarification. At this point, I'll go ahead and ask that anybody listening on the phone, please feel free to go ahead and unmute your phone, which is done by #6, and feel free to ask a question directly over to EPA Region 7.
This is Blaise Levin at Kansas State University's Technical Assistance to Brownfields program. I have just a quick clarification of a point made earlier on one of the web resources slide.
Go ahead.
And that would be to just that the specific tool we built is called TabEZ. It's TabEZ.org, and it is, I think it is present on the SmartE website, but this tool, in context of today's discussion, it's a grant writing tool that helps you write, you know, the assessment and cleanup grants that we've been talking about, and it helps you configure, you know, the right outline and format as was discussed. They're different for, you know, different types of grants. So I would encourage those who are writing those grants to check that website out. There's a lot of helpful hints and links to the sections of the guidelines, and it's very helpful. And also just wanted to mention that our program is available to review grants before they're turned in, just another set of eyes to look things over and to provide suggestions for a competitive grant proposal.
And is your contact information on that website for them to reach you?
I can give that. The primary contact is Sabina Martin. Her email is smartin, just M-A-R-T-I-N, 1, at ksu.edu. And the phone number to reach any of us in the program is 785-532-6519. And contact info is also on the website that I gave you, tabeasy.org.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions on the phone that anybody would like to ask? This is a great opportunity to ask them in an open forum and have Region 7 be able to provide some assistance. Okay, Stephanie, while we wait, do you want to, we have a couple more slides with some additional frequently asked questions. Why don't we move through those and give people a little bit more time to think about any other questions they'd like to ask before we finish?
Sure. On these next few slides, the questions and answers come from the headquarters FAQs. They're available at the web link that was on one of the previous slides. Let me take a quick look here, and I can tell you which one. The headquarters website is a good resource. It's on slide number 22, web-based resources. Looking at slide number 33, can I submit my proposal electronically? Yes, an applicant may submit a proposal to bfcompetition@epa.gov. Just be sure that you get them in before midnight Eastern Standard Time on October 16th. And applicants still need to submit the hard copy to the region by the deadline. It's recommended that if you decide to submit electronically, you do well in advance so that you don't have any problems. One of the team members slipped me a note and noted that at least in the registration for this webinar, there were a couple of people who are from outside the region. And the Brownfields coordinator for Region 7 is Susan Klein, and I provided her contact information. However, if you're submitting applications in other regions, your Brownfields coordinator is listed in the proposal guidelines along with his or her contact information. So just be sure that you submit to the appropriate Brownfield coordinator in your region. On slide 34, this is an assessment frequently asked question. Can a petroleum brownfield grant be used for incidental assessment or cleanup of hazardous substances? And the answer is yes, as long as the principal purpose of the assessment or cleanup is to assess or clean up a petroleum contaminated site. we do recognize that hazardous substances may be incidental to a site that's predominantly contaminated with petroleum.
And this is just another sort of clarification on that, and I don't want to complicate it too much. This would be where you think it is a petroleum site primarily. If it is petroleum and you know it's mixed with a hazardous substance, then it's basically considered a hazardous substance cleanup. So
if
you're looking at sort of discrete areas in a site or your best guess at the assessment phase.
On slide number 35, must I own the site when applying for a cleanup grant? Yes. In the 2010 competition guidelines, applicants for cleanup grant funding need to own the site by October 16th in order to receive the grant funding. And that's the last question I have. Nicole, we can just go back to the phone lines again and just give people some time to see if they have any more questions or comments.
Yes, thank you. We still have no questions submitted online, so again, I encourage you all to take advantage of this opportunity to ask any last-minute small or large questions pertaining to your brownfields proposal. This is a great opportunity. We will sit here for a couple minutes. If you have something on the phone, please feel free to speak up. I will monitor the internet, and then we'll close up from there. I do have one on the internet just now, so I will go ahead and ask this question, and then once the question is answered, if anyone on the phone has a question, please feel free to unmute your phone and speak to Region 7. So the question online is, if an applicant obtained a property in the 1960s, how did they demonstrate due diligence for cleanup grants?
Oh, boy. The first thing that I probably would ask in a situation like that was, did you acquire it through a tax foreclosure or eminent domain if it was a public entity? The second question, I guess, or the answer to the question is, prior to the enactment of the Brownfields Amendments, and it's written into the statute, we have what are called basically Gore factors, and you look at the prevailing standards of the time. However, I will caution you that those can be kind of strict in as much as it isn't just was it legal to buy a piece of property that was contaminated, but the question really is, did you know? So you're looking to establish basically an innocent landowner defense, and that is a pretty high bar under the Superfund liability scheme to establish. The second thing that you need to look at, though, is since the city or entity acquired the property in the 60s, have they exercised due care or taken reasonable steps to prevent or worsen the situation? And I think in a lot of circumstances, you're going to find that the city probably used the property and may have contributed to it, because you're looking now at a 40-year period of custody, and it's going to be a very, very difficult hurdle to overcome. That being said, the threshold issues, site eligibility is something that you can call the Brownfields coordinator, and then that call will be directed to me so that we can maybe have a further discussion of the specific facts. So that is one subject matter that the competition policy allows us to work with you on.
Great, thank you. We had another logistical question asked, and it is, how long does the review process usually take?
We're all laughing. The competition ends in October in this case. This is just a rough outline. I don't know, Devin, you step in if I mess anything up here because he's our competition coordinator for this year. But we expect to be looking at the threshold evaluations before Christmas. After, this is just rough timeline. After Christmas, the applications go to the different regions for review and ranking. And we usually end the ranking process sometime in late February, early March. Then the awards, headquarters makes the awards. They look at all the proposals ranked relative to one another, and they make the final cut. And, of course, headquarters has to make the adjustment to make sure that we have exactly $50 million awarded in petroleum grants. And so there's a little bit of juggling that's required to make sure that we fulfill the statutory amount, which is we have to have exactly $50 million in petroleum, no more, no less. It's 25%. So with that, the awards get communicated to the regions to prepare for press announcements, congressional notifications, those kinds of things. That usually happens in April or early May at the latest. So, and then we go into the whole cycle of actually having the grantees that are selected for awards preparing their work plans to get their funding, and we process those funding applications, and you should expect to actually have the money in hand by the end of September 2010. So that's kind of the cycle of our year. Then the whole thing starts again. You know, by the time we're finishing awarding the FY 2010 grants, we're already back into the competition for FY 2011. So that's kind of a year in the life of the Brownfields team.
Great, thank you. Anyone on the phone like to ask a question at this time? We will plan to stay on for a couple of minutes just to give people a final last opportunity, so encourage you not to be shy and stay with us during any silence, and I'll come back on in 2 minutes and see if we have any internet questions and last words from Region 7. I'll take this moment to ask another internet-submitted question. For the community-wide assessments, will EPA have to approve each site before the grant money can be used, or if, for example, the sites are similar, such as formerly used defense sites, can the individual approvals be waived?
Nicole, was the question that that all the sites have to be approved before
the grant money is spent on
it's actually spent. Okay. I'm going to let Bob answer that one, but the short answer is it's statutory, that we have to ensure that the sites are eligible Brownfields sites as defined by the law.
And so this is in the context of a clean-up. Oh, I'm going to...
community.
Community-wide assessment.
Community-wide assessment. Each site has to meet the site eligibility, and the primary one is the general prohibition that the grantee cannot be liable under Superfund for the site. And generally, that's resolved if they're not the current owner of the site, and it otherwise qualifies as a brownfield site. But go ahead.
This is Susan. In our award conditions that we attach to community-wide assessment awards, it indicates that you must submit the information about site eligibility to your EPA project officer prior to incurring costs at that site. It does not necessarily say approval, but EPA does have a responsibility to ensure that the sites are eligible. If you were to incur costs at an ineligible site because you submitted the information and you didn't wait for your project officer to confirm that the site was eligible and you incur costs, those were incurred at your own risk, and if it's ineligible, we will not be able to pay for those expenses. So
this is really looking at like pre-award cost if they've gone out and done some work on a site. If it has to be statutorily, Stephanie's absolutely correct. It has to be an eligible site. That's in the statute. It's not anything we can waive under our grants regs or anything like that as a pre-award cost.
Okay. Again, I ask if that did not provide the answer that you were looking for, please feel free to submit a clarification question online. Our phone community has been very quiet today. Does anybody like to take this opportunity to ask a question? Region 7, do you have any closing remarks? And that'll give anybody a couple seconds to submit any final questions online.
I think we want to just encourage you, if you think of any questions after this call, to either contact Devin Pollack, whose contact information is provided on one of the previous slides. Be sure to talk with your state, or as Blaise suggested, you also may contact the K-State Technical Assistance to Brownfields program and ask for their assistance with last-minute things. Check the checklist. Make sure that you submitted everything according to the guidelines, and be as specific as possible in your responses. Organize your responses according to the different sub-criteria so that the reviewers can find them easily. And we just wish you the best of luck. We hope that we get lots of good proposals from Region 7 this year.
Great. Well, I want to thank everybody for attending today, and thank you, Region 7. For taking the time to set up this Clue-In session. We have no further questions online. I'll ask Region 7 to feel free just to stay on the line. Oh, we actually just got a last-minute question submitted, so I'll take that opportunity to ask it. It's a follow-up on the eligibility question asked previously. If the state can make a determination that all FUDs are eligible, can EPA give a statutory determination that covers all sites that are planned for the assessment?
You're making a statement for formally used defense sites, so the state makes a determination?
Yes.
I think is the intent of the question. And no, EPA makes the determination whether or not a site is eligible. We don't defer to the state. We would make an independent determination. If there are facts and so forth that the state has, we consider them, but it's an EPA determination for hazardous substances site.
Because it's a federal statute.
Yeah. Thank you, Steph.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to give a couple more seconds to see if that answered the question or if there's an additional follow-up. While I wait for that online, we do ask that you take 2 additional minutes to fill out the evaluation form that is attached to the PowerPoint presentation and online at the Clulin website using the link provided in your confirmation email. You can also scroll to the bottom of the webpage and click on the seminar feedback form link. We do appreciate all comments to help improve these sessions. Region 7 has been hosting these for several years and continue to use feedback to determine the usefulness and also the presentation. In addition, Region 7 has posted additional documents online. Next to the seminar evaluation form on the webpage, there is a link for called Links for Additional Resources. And then we do encourage you to use the contact information presented in the presentation today for any further follow-up. One more opportunity for those either online or on the phone to ask a question. Otherwise, I'll let Region 7 just say one more thanks and appreciate everybody's participation today.
Thanks, Nicole, for being our moderator. And thank you to everybody who took time out to attend this call. And we just wish you the best of luck.
Okay, thank you, everybody. We appreciate your participation.